Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Johnny Ortiz with Pharmacist Productions coming to you from the Hudson Studios of WGXC, Community Supported Radio. We have a fascinating interview for you today, and we're going to get an update from Dan Ravitcher on a very important case that's moving through the court system right now, challenging Monsanto's practice of suing farmers for patent infringement who've been contaminated with genetically modified or engineered seed, not only through no fault of their own, but against their will, resulting in punitive cash awards to Monsanto. These awards are sometimes in the millions of dollars and often result in the bankruptcy of those farms. So today, as I said, we're joined by Dan Ravitcher, and he is the executive director of PubPat, that's P-U-B-P-A-T, and he and his organization are representing the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, which is the group that's filing against Monsanto. So far, there have been 144 in-court settlements, 700 out-of-court settlements, and we are literally talking about tens, if not hundreds, of millions of dollars. So, let's see. I'd love, Dan, if we could start with you giving us a description of what PubPat does and who you are and how they can be found. Thanks.
Sure, and thank you again for having us here today. This is a pleasure. So, the Public Patent Foundation is a not-for-profit legal services organization. So we're basically a small law firm. And our mission is to represent the public's interest in the patent system, and specifically the public's interest against undeserved patents and unfound patent policy. So a patent is, in essence, the government granting one person or one company the exclusive right to do something. And it's not appropriate for the government to give that exclusive right if that company doesn't deserve it. And unfortunately, our patents office in Washington, D.C., today acts like a rubber stamp and hands out patents to companies who merely ask for it, even when they don't deserve it. Half of all issued patents later challenged in court are proven to have been undeservingly granted. And what the problem is, when you have a patent on, say, an important drug or some other important technology, that one company is allowed to charge super competitive prices and prohibit other companies from competing based on a patent that they don't deserve. So our work at PubPat is to challenge patents like that that are undeserved, that are harming the public.
Perfect. Are there other organizations that are similar in mission?
Not that I'm aware of, and not in the United States. There are some organizations that do other legal work related to the public's access to technology, but none of them take on patents as their core focus. We are the exclusive nonprofit that's focused on ensuring the patent system works for the people, not for the corporations who take advantage of it.
You must be one terrifically busy nonprofit legal organization.
Like most nonprofits, we would love to be able to work ourselves out of a job, but that has not happened yet.
Yes, and probably won't be happening anytime soon. So, Dan, would you give us an overview of this particular lawsuit, the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Associations versus Monsanto, and what you hope to accomplish with this lawsuit?
Sure. So as you mentioned at the beginning, there is a history of Monsanto aggressively asserting its patents against farmers, including farmers who came to possess Monsanto's genetically modified seed through no fault of their own. They sue and threaten and use their patents in a way to bully any farmer that they think isn't paying them an appropriate royalty. Well, what happens when an organic farmer or a biodynamic farmer who is categorically opposed to genetically modified seed nonetheless suffers contamination, and then they are not only subject to that harm being caused by the contamination, but then they're also subject to the insult of being accused of being a patent infringer. Once you have possession of the seed, Monsanto could sue you for patent infringement. So there's a law that was created by Congress a few decades ago called the Declaratory Judgment Act. And the Declaratory Judgment Act says that if you are worried about potentially being sued in the future by someone, you have the right to actually go to court preemptively and sue them in order to get a decision from the court that they never have the right to sue you. You can't sue them for money. You can't sue them for anything else. All you can sue them for is a preemptive declaration that they could never sue you. And so that's the kind of lawsuit this is. We represent, although there are 83 named plaintiffs, many of them are organizations who have joined the lawsuit on behalf of all their members. And so we represent tens of thousands of individual farmers and seed distributors throughout the country and throughout the world, none of whom have been contaminated yet by genetically modified seed, but all of whom are at risk of being contaminated and then potentially threatened with patent infringement claims by Monsanto. So we filed this declaratory judgment lawsuit asking the judge to rule that should any of our clients ever be contaminated by Monsanto's genetically modified seed in the future, Monsanto would have no right to accuse them of patent infringement. And that's what the lawsuit is, and that's what we're seeking from the court.
So, this declarative judgment is the gold standard and will preemptively protect this group of farmers and presumably many or all other farmers from if they are contaminated, obviously against their will. They're not seeking out Monsanto's products. Monsanto's products are finding them. Then they will be protected from lawsuits going forward, although obviously that has not always been the case.
Of other farmers, yes. It's been well documented in the media, including a very detailed report by the CBS Evening News and Vanity Fair. Several documentaries have profiled these people who have been subject to these lawsuits. So it's well documented, and Monsanto doesn't even dispute it, that they have asserted the patents against people who are contaminated by their seed.
Okay. And then additionally, though, for BD and organic growers, they would go on to lose their certification if it actually was established that they had been contaminated.
I'm not an expert on the certification rules. I'm a patent attorney generally and didn't have much to do with agriculture until this lawsuit, but that is my understanding, that suffering contamination could very likely threaten the certification of a farm.
Okay, it's my understanding that this case actually represents a number of firsts. Can you lay those out and what those are?
Well, it's in all cases that I'm aware of where Monsanto's patents on genetically modified seed have been involved in lawsuits, it's always been at Monsanto's behest. Most of those lawsuits were filed in St. Louis, where Monsanto's headquartered. Mm-hmm. And through our review of these litigations, the vast majority of the time, the defendants don't have the resources or the wherewithal to put up any meaningful defense. You know, Monsanto can hire their teams of lawyers to go after these small farmers who just can't even afford to hire sufficient legal counsel, and so they usually roll over and have to accept whatever settlement demands Monsanto makes of them. So this is the first time where a well-armed party has been able to aggressively defend itself against the threat posed by Monsanto's patents. We also make a number of legal arguments in the lawsuit against Monsanto's patents that have not been made by other parties in the courts to date. So there are several arguments that we made here that no one else has made before. And one of the things Monsanto has said to the press about this lawsuit is that their patents have already been upheld in court before. And while that may be technically true, that they've won some other cases, in none of those cases were their patents challenged in any meaningful way, and definitely not in the ways that we seek to challenge them.
Okay. I would love to jump into that. I'm sensitive to time, of course, but some of the language for lay people is very hard to grok, and we're going to have a lot of eyes looking at the synopsis of the case, and it would be very helpful, I think, if we could just hit the high points on some of the important language, like the utility requirement and socially useful.
Right. So what are the preeminent arguments we make against Monsanto's patents is that there's a rule in patent law that you can only have a patent on something that has utility, that has some benefit for society. And there's a very old case explaining this rule, over 170 years old, that says, for example, an invention to poison the people is not patentable. And so we allege, in this case, that genetically modified seed does not have any social utility, and that there is, in fact, significant evidence that suggests it may indeed be an invention that will poison the people, and therefore no patent on that genetically modified seed can be valid because it does not fulfill the utility requirement.
Okay. So continuing along the lines of helping the public understand some of the legal ease, you also use the term strict liability, and that it standard does not consider intent.
Sure. It's generally believed that patent law is a strict liability offense, which means you are a violator of the patent whether you have any knowledge or intent to undertake the actions which constitute the infringement. However, that theory has never really been challenged in the courts through an interpretation of the statute, which says you only infringe a patent if you make, use, or sell a patented thing. So in this lawsuit, we are also, in addition to the other arguments we're making, arguing that a party who comes to possess genetically modified seed through no fault of their own, and in some cases perhaps even no knowledge of their own, cannot be said to have made, used, or sold that seed with any knowledge or intent, and therefore can't be considered an infringer.
Okay, great.
So we are arguing a patent infringement, at least in this circumstance, is not a strict liability offense.
Excellent. And then there's another term that is featured prominently, which is misuse of the patent process.
Sure. So I'll just step back for 1 minute and give a little history. In England, there were two different types of judges, two different types of courts. There were courts of law where you went to if there was a certain rule that had been passed by the king that had been broken. And then there were also courts of equity, which were where you went if there was no law against what somebody did against you, but nonetheless it was unfair. They harmed you in some way. Well, in America, we combine those two. So here in America, you can go to court if someone violates a law that's been written, but you can also go to court to get redress for a violation of fairness. There's just some fundamentally unfair thing that somebody done to you, even though there's no law against it. So under patent law, there is the ability for a party to say, even if legally I'm infringing a patent, there are other things that the patent holder has done that are unfair, which give the judge a reason to refuse to enforce the patent against me. So even if I concede I am infringing the patent, I'm nonetheless excused from that infringement because of something the patent holder themselves has done. So an example is the doctrine of misuse, which says if you misuse your patent, you are not allowed to enforce them against another party. And one way to misuse your patents is to assert them in a way that helps you gain or maintain anti-competitive benefit in a certain marketplace. So if you use your patents, even if they're valid and infringed, but you use them to gain monopoly power or to kill off competition so that you can be the sole supplier of a certain product, the courts will use their powers of equity to refuse to allow you to enforce your patents, even if under law they are technically valid and infringed. So we argue here that Monsanto has misused their patents by implementing them in a campaign to monopolize the markets for these various seeds, in which they have 90-95% market share, which by definition is a monopoly, and they have monopoly power. And their use of these seeds and these lawsuits against farmers and others who may want to use alternative seeds or seeds provided by competitors is a misuse of the patent. So even if they are valid and infringed, the judge should refuse to allow Monsanto to ever enforce them against our clients because of Monsanto's misuse of those patents.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. I think that'll be helpful for people who are watching this suit closely who are not attorneys and especially not patent attorneys. You have a very special date, a very important date coming up. In July, Monsanto filed a motion to dismiss. Judge Naomi Buchwald has given plaintiffs the opportunity to present oral arguments to defend the very nature of the suit in federal court in New York City on January 31st. Can you share with us, can you explain why this is so important?
So when you bring a case in the courts, you only have to pay $150 to start the lawsuit. And it takes a lot of time and money for there to be the courthouse and the judge and the staff salaries. And so the Constitution requires that there not be any cases before the courts that aren't real and that don't involve real people and have a real impact. You know, disputes that are merely academic or hypothetical or policy-based are supposed to all go to Congress, a different branch of our government. So in our Constitution, there's this case or controversy, this actual case, actual controversy requirement. So Monsanto made a motion to dismiss our lawsuit, saying that this is a purely fanciful, philosophical debate, and that no one really is being negatively impacted by the risk of being sued for patent infringement if they were to become contaminated by Monsanto's genetically modified seed. And we've responded in a couple of different ways. First of all, if there was any is created by Monsanto and could be addressed by Monsanto. So what I mean by that is we wrote a letter to Monsanto before we formally initiated the lawsuit asking them to waive any right or simply say that they would never sue our clients for patent infringement, which I would think would be a pretty reasonable thing for them to say. Of course, they would never sue people who don't want to purchase their product and don't have anything to do with their product. But they refused to do that, and it would have taken them one piece of paper, maybe only one sentence, to say we would never sue organic biodynamic farmers who come contaminated by our seed through no fault of their own. Instead, they filed this big, lengthy motion saying that this lawsuit is all fanciful. And so we responded and said, if you look at Monsanto's history of patenting, their history of filing lawsuits against farmers, including those who are merely contaminated, their aggressive licensing of their patents, the large notifications about all their patents on their bags, that it could not be clear that there is this intent by Monsanto to use their patents in a way to aggressively sue and threaten to sue farmers, including those who've been contaminated. And so the judge has decided to have oral argument on this motion by Monsanto to have our case dismissed because they argue the case is not real and doesn't impact real Americans, and we argue the other side of the coin. So that oral argument is being held on January 31st at 10 a.m. down in the Southern District of New York in Manhattan by Judge Naomi Buchwald. And so during the oral argument, I'm sure she will ask many questions of us and Monsanto's lawyers about what the law is and what's the test that she's supposed to apply. And then she'll also ask us what facts are applicable to those tests and how should she weigh the various facts.
Dan, if you could, it would be very helpful for people to understand exactly the scope of what we're talking about as far as lawsuits, settlements, awards.
Well, we know from the public information that Monsanto has filed lawsuits against over 140 farmers throughout their campaign of asserting patents against farmers. We don't know how many investigations they performed and how many settlements they received without having to actually file a lawsuit.
There's some documentation that says it's at least several times more than the number of lawsuits they filed. Similarly, we also don't know exactly how much money they've gotten from private settlements because those details are kept confidential. We do know that in some of the cases where a verdict has been entered, it's run up into the millions of dollars against a small family farmer. So we're talking hundreds of investigations and lawsuits, which the vast majority have been settled or taken to verdict, and those that have gone to verdict have seen awards as high as millions of dollars. So we're talking a significant size of the campaign of patent assertion and also a significant amount of money for farmers. It may not be that much money for Monsanto, which is a multi-billion dollar business, but for the farmers, many of whom have had to suffer severely because of the financial impact that these lawsuits and investigations have had on them.
And a lot of bankruptcies associated with those settlements.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, just by way of clarification, so with these investigations, is it actually legal for Monsanto to, I guess, trespass onto a farm that they suspect has some of their genetic material?
It depends. It's a state-by-state issue, and there are some states which allow for Monsanto to go. If it's not illegal, it's not called trespass. It's only called trespass if it's illegal. So you're kind of using a conclusion in your question. But there are some states which allow for investigations to occur with or without the consent of the farm owner or the farmer.
It's just amazing, anyone that I talk to about this, that this is actually legal. What they're doing is actually sanctioned by U.S. law in the year 2012.
Well, some of the times they don't even go on to the property to confirm that there is a violation, arguably, of their patents. They simply rely on anonymous tips, or so what they say are anonymous tips, and there has been documented evidence of them making false claims and false allegations against people. So, you know, they don't always make sure to confirm the accusations they're making against people before they actually make them.
So, Dan, after the 31st or the hearing of oral arguments in federal court, how long do you think it'll be before the judge actually passes down her assessment?
Well, the judge has the right to rule whenever she would like to rule. She could do it from the bench that day. She could take several months to rule. One thing that I know about this judge is she is very thorough and very deliberate, and so, you know, we like that and we're happy with that. And so we'll just have to see how it goes on the 31st. But there's no real rules or requirements that are placed on her. She's the judge and it's her court.
So, Dan, after the 31st or the hearing of oral arguments in federal court, how long do you think it'll be before the judge actually passes down her assessment?
Well, the judge has the right to rule whenever she would like to rule. She could do it from the bench that day. She could take several months to rule. One thing that I know about this judge is she is very thorough and very deliberate, and so, you know, we like that and we're happy with that. So we'll just have to see how it goes on the 31st. But there's no real rules or requirements that are placed on her. She's the judge and it's her court.
All right. Well, I know a lot of people are very grateful that you've taken this on and that PubPat has taken this on. And as you said earlier in the interview, most farmers don't have the resources to either, A, defend themselves or certainly, you know, proactively fight Monsanto's ability to do this. So you have a lot of people's gratitude, and we wish you Godspeed.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us.